Back rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining the phone line now is Kevin Sweeney, Sports Illustrated and from College Basketball Central on Twitter at CBB_Central. He was on hand in Vegas last night, it looks like, to see two games. One, not so fun. The second one, though, you know it's going to deliver. It's Zags versus UCLA, and my gosh, that was unbelievable. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm good. That was a heck of a basketball game. Appreciate you having me on.
No question. So first, let's start with the first things first. Arkansas took that about as far as they could, huh? I mean, that we all year I didn't quite want to quit them because all the talent they had, but it looked like UConn just, I mean, outclassed them in every single way.
Yeah, I mean, Arkansas didn't play well, but I thought, you know, that was the UConn that has looked like the best team in the country at points, right? That was 15-0 UConn, not, you know, lose 6 of 8 in January UConn. Like they were just a cut above. They came out early and you know, Arkansas just had no answers defensively for what UConn could throw at them. And look, I mean, that's gonna be the thing for everybody. When UConn is making threes and putting pressure on you from the perimeter, you're just not gonna be able to stop them, especially with an Adama Sanogo inside that looks really refreshed.
Yeah,
I think the Big East grind really got to him, but he looked really, really good last weekend and looked really, really good yesterday.
And for that team, Arkansas, obviously, you know, Anthony Black's fantastic. Nick Smith Jr. is fantastic. But Devo Davis, down the stretch of the season, especially in the NCAA tournament, set the table. It just felt like a death wish for him not to show up offensively in that game.
Yeah, he got the two fouls right away. That was big. You know, the thing with Arkansas is they just really lack shooting.
Yep.
So, you know, there's just not a lot of room to operate for a guy like Black. Like, Black's game really sets us up well if you have a bunch of shooters to surround him with and he can spray it around. But when especially Devo's off the floor, you know, there's just not a lot of weapons to actually get downhill and create something offensively. I think that's really what they ran into, especially in the first half.
Yeah, now to hell with that game, because that wasn't fun, 88-65. That second game, though, good God, man. I want to see these teams play every single year in the NCAA tournament. It's unbelievable. Every time they meet, it comes down to the final 10 seconds.
They just produce instant classics. And, you know, it's crazy the parallels even between that game and both the 2006 game, that's obviously historic, and then the 2021 Final Four game. I mean, I think it was 71-62 in the 2006 game with 3:20 to go, and it was 72-62 with 2:40 to go yesterday. And then the shot to win it, you know, like a 30-footer. Julian Strother came into college the same year as Jalen Suggs. They're great friends, still are. It was just a little bit eerie, the whole thing. But, I mean, what a game, what a finish. What guts to take that shot by Strother. What guts by Mark Few not to get the ball to Drew Timmy. I don't even know if it's guts. I don't know if it was a good decision. But it looks great now because, you know, the kid made a huge shot.
Yeah, and Amari Bailey, we thought he ended it for all intents and purposes with, what was it, about 20 seconds on the clock. But, honestly, Julian Strother, like, that's the embodiment of everything I love about the tournament. Just ridiculous confidence from 35 feet out. Like, that was unreal to see him with the confidence to put that thing up.
And to have the confidence to do that right after you had just, you know, essentially choked away the lead, right?
Right.
They had turned it over. They had missed two free throws. They'd given up and one. They gave up the three to Bailey. Like, you're shell-shocked. And for them to come together in that huddle and have the confidence that they did in that final play was huge. And it's good coaching. It's also the experience, right? I mean, you know, these guys have played in a lot of big games, not even just Timmy and Strother and guys who've been in the Gonzaga program, but like Malachi Smith, you know, that they're, you know, who's awesome for them off the bench. Smith played in the NCAA tournament last year with Chattanooga and had a heartbreaking loss to Illinois. Like, these guys have tasted March. They know what it takes to win close games in this tournament. And I think they really relied on that experience when UCLA made its run.
And for UCLA, like, I mean, I don't know how you feel, but there's nothing to be super ashamed about. You didn't have Adam Bona out there. You didn't have Jalen Clark, two of your top three rebounders. They end up getting out-rebounded 50-26 and still somehow stuck in that game.
Yeah, I mean, UCLA was the grittiest team in the country all year. And for them to be around, I think there's a lot about the culture of that program under Mick Cronin. I know people, you know, be critical of, you know, this decision, that decision, but I think at the end of the day, like he threw whatever he could throw at Drew Timmy. There was just no stopping him. I thought he had a good plan. I thought his team was really prepared. And, you know, you talk about the slim margins of March now. I mean, two times, really 3 years in a row, UCLA has been right there. And not just right there to, like, advance. Like, right there to win the thing, right? I mean, obviously, maybe they don't beat Baylor in 21. No one was beating Baylor. But are we really saying it's crazy they would have won it all last year if they got by Carolina? If Caleb Love doesn't have, like, 30 in the second half? Right. And are we really saying they couldn't win it all this year if they had gotten past Gonzaga? This team was as good as anyone, even with their injuries. And, you know, I feel for guys like Hawkins and Campbell who, you know, left it all on the line and just come up short.
Now, holler at me about how was the scene there in T-Mobile Arena? That was toward the end of that game. I don't know what the stands look like. How was that sort of the atmosphere inside there?
I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome all day. I mean, the Arkansas fans that showed out, I think the official attendance was like 18,500. And obviously a lot of Gonzaga fans that come to Vegas a lot. But, you know, the shock, again, I think one of the things we love about March is the tension. And I just think you could feel the shock factor when Bailey made the three, like, oh my gosh, we're like actually going to lose this game. And then for Strother to make it just sent the place kind of pandemonium. I mean, it was a perfect March college basketball game. It was not necessarily the most well played in every way, but man, oh man, some of the playmaking at the end was pretty fun to watch.
Talking with Kevin Sweeney at @CBB_Central. Michigan State versus Kansas State was an instant classic as well. 98-93. It really was 96-93 there at the end. But Malik Nowell puts in his 19 and 20th point there at the end, just to sort of add to that lead. Even though it was, you know, basically was 0 seconds on the clock by the time he actually put that in. But for him, is that the early leader by far for MOP?
I mean, no doubt. I mean, he has been, I mean, just an unbelievable story, but has, you know, in March he went with point guards, and he has been the best one in this tournament. The way that, I mean, look, teams have thrown everything at him. I mean, Kentucky was blitzing the ball screens and, like, trying to take it out of his hands. It didn't work. Michigan State was, like, over-helping and trying to make him into a passer. That didn't work. Obviously, it didn't work in tournament record and assists. You know, the end of the game, I thought Michigan State did some good stuff to try to just make him a scorer again, but he made him pay at times. And defensively, he didn't get destroyed, I think, as much as you'd expect a 5'7" guy to do.
Right.
So, I mean, he's been awesome. I give him all the credit in the world. He's a fun player to watch. Cool to get to see him do it in his home city, and now he has a chance to go to the Final Four.
Yep, 20 points and 19 assists. That's an NCAA tournament record for Malik Nowell. Do you think, I know John Calipari has already apologized for calling him a little guy, but I think we fully rethink that at this moment, right? Good Lord. I can't believe this guy has been able to do this at 5'7", 5'8". And it just, like, the thing is, just watching him control the pace of the game, watching him, he had, what, 5 steals last night. He controlled everything about that game, and he's still a 5'8", 175-pound man.
It's so fun. And I think the biggest thing is he plays with just supreme confidence. And I think that's something a lot of these smaller guards have always had to develop their games to the point where they are elite playmakers. But I think oftentimes they get reeled in a little bit. And I think you saw that last year. He's playing with another point guard in Nigel Pack under Bruce Weber, and he was a good player, but he wasn't anything special. And, you know, I think Jerome Tang just basically gave him the keys to the operation and said, look, we want you to be you. We want you to make plays. We want to, you know, see a little bit of that Rucker Park in you. And man, oh man, I think because it worked early, it just allowed him to become more and more confident, be more and more audacious on the passes he makes. And when he gets it going, there's maybe no more exciting player to watch in this tournament.
So speaking of Jerome Tang, I have said on this show when the Naismith Coach of the Year finalists were announced, I think he's the guy who should get it. They were picked last in the Big 12. They were able to pace it. Now they're in the Elite Eight. But it's Matt Painter, Kelvin Sampson, Shaka Smart, and Jerome Tang. Do you think Jerome Tang should get that award ultimately?
Yeah, I do, without question. I mean, any coach, I think, who makes the Final Four in his first year probably deserves to be the National Coach of the Year. Maybe some exceptions, right? Hubert last year, I think, is a potential exception because they struggled so much the regular season, and, you know, they had always had the talent. But I think him just getting a 3 seed was enough to be, this is really right there for that award. And then to do this and potentially make a Final Four, I think it has to be him. And look, in the tournament, he's beaten John Calipari and he's beaten Tom Izzo. Like, that's not bad company.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good. That is pretty damn good. So you're pretty confident about their chances there against FAU, even though FAU last night put Tennessee out of their misery. And I just, every single year with Rick Barnes, you know they're due. But you seem to like Kansas State's chances against FAU. I think they're early 2-point favorite.
Yeah, I would lean towards K-State. Like, I really like FAU. I mean, one, you don't win 34 games by accident, right? Like, they're really, really good. But I don't know that some of the matchups that they were able to exploit, especially in the second half, I'm not sure FAU can do that against K-State, which is a little bit smaller, a little bit more mobile. It's just going to take, I think, FAU finding ways to make the K-State guards uncomfortable. And obviously we've seen how well Noel's playing. It just doesn't feel realistic to slow him down at this point. And if that's the case, K-State's going to be tough out.
Talking with Kevin Sweeney. Now, Tennessee, around here in our listening area, you hear a lot of Jekyll and Hyde discussions about what they looked like against Duke. Olivier Kamwas, 27 points, shot unbelievably well from the field. Obviously didn't have that type of game against FAU. But I hear that Jekyll and Hyde stuff, and at this point, like, can you really call it that, or do you just sort of know offensively it's coming? You know they're going to have a night like that. And honestly, I mean, if you look at their first round matchup against Louisiana, they had a night like this. They just were able to out-talent Louisiana in the end.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I think they built a flawed but talented team, right? Like, at the end of the day, they didn't have enough consistent shot makers and really consistent playmakers more than anything else offensively where they could really be a national title contender, right? Could they have made a Final Four if they got hot and consecutively? Potentially. But six in a row is always just not going to be realistic for this group. And I think that was only made more challenging by losing Zakai Ziegler, because I think, against FAU, they could have used just a guy who could make stuff happen and get into the paint, especially when things were going poorly. And so, that's something that needs to be addressed this spring in the portal, potentially adding another guard to go with Zakai. Also, we don't really know what Zakai looks like next year health-wise, but this has been the story with Rick Barnes and something like he's not going to be able to run from. I give him a lot of credit for the Duke win. That was a huge win. I think in many ways makes the season feel a little bit more successful, but I think given the talent level and maybe the expectations, this still feels like you're coming up short, especially right, to go out to the team you did. I know FAU is really good,
of course,
but it's just not going to feel the same when you lose to FAU than lose.
I mean, you were the longest favorite. You were the longest favorite of last night. I think they were what, 5.5, 4.5 at most books. Yeah. I mean, so theoretically, Vegas thought that way as well. Now, how much of the this should have been us factor should Memphis fans be feeling right this second?
I mean, that's the tournament. Like you're not going to sit there and not feel like, man, like we could be in the Final Four.
Right.
We could be right here. But I think at the same time, right, like that's the beauty of this thing, right? And like FAU found it. I mean, FAU's run's been very similar in my mind to the Loyola Chicago run of Final Four in 2018, where, yeah, it was a really good team, but they got, buzzer beater in the first game, last second shot in the second game, a big three with, in a 1-point game in the third, and in the third game, it gets you to lead eight, and then you go from there. Like, they had the 16 seed get knocked out in that region as well. Loyola was in the Virginia region with the UMBC game, so that blew up the bracket a little bit, and so it was there for the taking for a team like Memphis. And FAU just made one more play.
Man, sure did. And I think the officials are still going to be the part of the causation. A lot of people are going to talk about that. Now, Dusty May, what do you think ultimately happens with him? I mean, I watched this, see the first Elite Eight in school history for FAU. I mean, he's gone, I think, at some point. It's just sort of a matter of when. When do you think that ultimately happens? And what jobs do you think would be out there for him here relatively soon, or this offseason, maybe next offseason?
That's the tricky thing, is that part of winning this deep makes it hard to get a job.
Yeah.
I will say Dusty has been patient. Like, Dusty was not interested in Ole Miss. Penn State just opened. Maybe the timing's a little better there, but, like, if you make the Final Four at FAU, do you really take like the 12th best job in the Big Ten?
Right.
I don't know. Like, I'm not totally sure. You might not. And they have a chance to bring a lot of guys back. Like, they're going to lose a couple, and it's possible that there's, you know, the portal could take guys as well. But like, they're like, they could be pretty darn good again. And, you know, obviously maybe not a Final Four, but you win 20 games right after, you know, an Elite Eight or a Final Four run, then you're still going to be in the mix. So I think long term, you know, he was a, you know, an Indiana manager. So he can get back up to the Midwest potentially. He could also stay down south. Like, he has a lot of options. And the FAU job is interesting because they're moving up to the American, yep. Right? There's success in football. There should be some money there. But also, like, that is not perceived as a very good basketball job.
Of course
right
not.
Now. And maybe it should be. Maybe it should be because, right, you're living in paradise. You're, you know, making, you know, decent money. You know, you should be able to recruit to it. But it is still not necessarily viewed as, like, a place that, like, it is set up for long-term success.
And you could probably speak to this, but it's interesting. Like, I haven't really heard his name tied to any open jobs right this second. I mean, is there anything you've heard his name tied to at the moment?
Not really. Not really.
Right.
I mean,
that's
part
tricky.
Of it, you know, part of it, right. The only big job is Texas. And
yep.
I don't think Texas is hiring Dusty May.
And speaking of which, how long till we get the Rodney Terry announcement? It feels like that should have come by now.
I mean, see if they see depends on how far they advance. But I think if they don't make it to the Final Four, there's still a real possibility that Rodney Terry is not.
So who would be in that conversation outside of Rodney Terry?
A couple of I think they would they've made their overtures to some bigger names, and I'm not sure how receptive that's been. I think the search is kind of on pause right now, waiting to see what happens with Terry this weekend. You could see potentially guys like Dana Altman and Brad Underwood as like second-tier names willing to move from good jobs already. I think those would be the types of names you hear if Rodney Terry loses this weekend.
Yeah, and Dana Altman did not seem happy with the NIT exit there against Wisconsin. Did you see those quotes?
I did,
good
yeah.
Lord.
I
mean, that seems like a guy who's at peace with not coming back at Oregon.
I mean, going from one place that doesn't really care about basketball to another would be kind of tricky, but I think there's a little bit more passion in Texas than there is in Eugene.
I get you. Now, tonight's games, we have one that's already tipped off, and I just sort of look at them, and it just doesn't seem like we're going to have the fireworks we did last night. Like, it just doesn't feel that way. A lot of longer favorites, Texas 4 points, Creighton 10 points over Princeton, Alabama 7 points. Over San Diego State, Houston 7.5 points over Miami. Which games are you paying closer attention to that you ultimately think will be close?
I think Houston Miami has the potential to be because I think, you know, I was in Albany last weekend when Miami beat Indiana and Miami just destroyed them on the glass. And that was so impressive because you think about Indiana, you think about Trayce Jackson Davis and Race Thompson, they're big and physical, and Miami's undersized and they took it to them. And I think it proved to me that, like, Miami can hang in toughness-wise against Houston, who's probably the toughest or the second toughest team in the country, depending on UCLA's ranking in that discussion. So if they can hang in on the glass, then basically it's a shooting contest, right? It's can Isaiah Wong and Jordan Miller, can Isaiah Wong and Jordan Miller find a way to outshoot Marcus Sasser and Jabal Shedd? They do that, they have a chance.
Yep. Yep, understood. And that's sort of been my thought process with them the whole way through. But I mean, ultimately, when you look at that game, is it whoever controls the pace of the game will likely win it? Miami's going to try to get up and down. Houston plays very slow.
I'm not totally sure that Miami's going to want to make this a sprint. Like, I think they'll try to make Houston uncomfortable, but I don't think this is like a try to get into the 80s. Like, I think Miami will be fine in the half court.
Yeah, understood. Now, Bama, I mean, this is the golden road. Do you think this is sort of open and shut, that they're going to be obviously a Final Four team and ultimately be a potential national championship team?
I mean, to me, them and UConn are the two teams that have, like, another gear, right? Houston's been really good, but to me, Bama is the only other team than the UConn team I've been kind of following around here lately. When they're clicking, you're like, nobody's beating them today. And I think the pass is obviously set up well. You know, potentially maybe I could see Creighton knock them off, but their bracket really opened up when, you know, Arizona goes down and Baylor goes down and Virginia. So I think they'll be in Houston, and I would not be at all surprised if they cut down on us.
Now, last thing for Kevin Sweeney. It's tricky because I look at Texas, and I know what they've gone through this year with the whole Chris Beard thing, but they've been fantastic. Rodney Terry has taken the buck, and he has ran with it. He's done a fantastic job. But it feels like as a two seed, they haven't really been talked about or hyped up as much as they should be. But what do you think about them in that type of conversation, Final Four national championship conversation?
I mean, I think they're an awesome team. Like, one of the things that's made them really even more dangerous lately is that Dylan Dessou, their big guy, has really started to give them a consistent scoring presence on the inside. You know, and when they're getting interior production to go with Timmy Allen and Marcus Carr and Jabari Rice and Tyrese Hunter, like, you're just not beating them. Mm-hmm. So I you know, Xavier's got scoring pop, but I'm just not sure how they hang in tonight unless Sule Boom goes crazy.
So what's your travel schedule coming up here soon? I assume you're staying through tonight. You'll probably watch UConn Gonzaga tomorrow night in T-Mobile.
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas for the weekend. Quick trip back to Chicago for a couple of days to rest up, and then off to Houston Wednesday morning for the final sprint at the Final Four.
Great stuff. Well, enjoy, man, and travel safe. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
Appreciate Kevin Sweeney giving us some time from College Basketball Central and from Sports Illustrated. You can find him on Twitter at @CBB_Central. All right, now we've come to the end of the show, end of the week. Let's go ahead and get into the rewind.
Now is the rewind. Now we
play it back like rewind.
Brought to you by Memphis Barbecue Company. Rewind on 92.9.
Night one of the Sweet 16 was nutso. It was unbelievable. Malik Nowell is the MOP right this second. The Zags outpace UCLA in another classic. Julian Strother, I can't imagine having that amount of confidence. And Tennessee, once again, sitting at home. And once again, wondering how did we lose to Florida Atlantic? We also discussed Jamyris Schutz and the sucker punch that immediately followed the Tiger women's loss against Bowling Green State. She's being charged with assault. That cannot happen. But I really hope we can find a way forward without having to go to these lengths. Also, Grizz versus Rockets for a second straight game. We'll keep an eye on that before they head off to Atlanta Sunday. Jeff joined at 5, and we broke down the tournament a few moments ago with Kevin Sweeney. If you want to play back the whole show, download the Odyssey app and search 92.9 ESPN.
Watch the biggest game tonight, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook.
Grizz versus Rockets. Grizz minus the 13 against the Rockets. Same basic spread as the other night. I know we picked, Bennett picked the Rockets the other night, and we actually got the cover there. But we're going to pass you off here in just a moment to pregame with Jessica Benson. Tip will be at 7 o'clock. And also, I think you have to add this. Tonight, if the Grizzlies get a win, is the night that they can clinch their playoff berth. I'm going to go Grizzlies minus the 13, and there's one big reason. Dylan Brooks is going to be back suited up. And I thought he was a big reason the perimeter players of that team. I mean, you talk about Kenyon Martin Jr., Jalen Green, some of those guys being able to get their game off. Last time around, I feel like Dylan Brooks can shut a little bit of that down and hold them under 125 points. Grizzlies will score how they want. I have them covering tonight, minus the 13.
Fast forward.
We have Sweet 16 matchups. We're going to have Elite 8 matchups to watch over the weekend. We'll have the Grizzlies weekend again tonight versus the Rockets. And then we're going to go on Sunday and sort of watch them in Atlanta and see what they can do there. We could be talking about 6-0. Six straight wins for them in their last six games. We'll also keep an eye on happenings in the NFL, maybe more on Lamar and Aaron Rodgers news headed out of the weekend. But that's a wrap for today and the week. Thanks to Kevin Sweeney and Jeff Calkins for their contributions to the show. We'll meet back here same time on Monday. But in the meantime, we pass you out to Grizzlies pregame with Jessica Benson. Tip will be at 7 o'clock versus the Rockets. For Brad, I'm Gabe. Be easy, be safe, and enjoy your weekend.